we were just talking about the place that you photographed this past summer for us. That piece of property has been in his family since he was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, there's a, you know, adoration for that piece of property that not everyone else has. So he loved it to begin with and wanted to take care of it and wanted to do what was right for it.
Right.
And, you know, it, it results in us being able to talk him through, okay, you know you love this. So now let's figure out together what's right for it.
Welcome to Architecture, Design, and Photography. Today we are speaking with architect Russ Tyson, a principal at Witten Architects in Portland. He's a graduate of Andrews University of Architecture, Art, and Design. After college, Tyson was a lead project manager of a 50-person architecture firm in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where he designed large-scale commercial, institutional, and healthcare projects. He continued at another large firm when he and his wife, Janelle, a Freeport native, he met at Andrews, moved to Maine in 2006. Tyson has been a part of the team at Witten Architects for over a decade, where he focuses on residential design here in New England. Our interview today is sponsored by Maine Home Design. Don't miss Russ's AIA Design Theory in the upcoming March issue of Maine Home Design. Thank you for coming into the studio today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Russ is absolutely, in my opinion, one of the top designers to contend with in Maine. You've got a lot of just natural ability, not even to mention like in the sketching and artistic realm, but what you have created in the architectural sphere here in New England has been just astounding. And I've been lucky enough to shoot some of it, and Russ is one of the best in Maine. There's a lot of good talent here in Maine, in my opinion, but you by far are one of the, let's say, top five easily in my opinion.
Wow. So, thank you, Trent.
Just my opinion, but
that's incredible company to be part of for sure.
Well, so to start out, what's got you excited about architecture these days?
You know, I think for me, it's become designing homes for sure. And, you know, designing homes for, you know, very specific people that, you know, requires you to get to know somebody, you know, not unlike, you would a friend, or as best as you can in that sort of environment. 'Cause I think, you know, the home will end up being so much better the more you know that person.
That's a thing that I found, that an architect brings to the table, the value that comes with an architect to the table that is so important. With myself having an architecture background, I took note of how my wife and I and our kids lived. And when I got to the point of working through a design for our home, I knew all of those things, how we lived. No one had to drag it out of me. I just kind of kept a mental thing going. And then when we got to designing it, I knew what I had to do and worked it out. And now that we live in it, it's like, wow, this is tailored to us. Mm-hmm. How's your process of really, you know, dragging that out of a client? How do you get to that point? Because I remember when I tried to practice architecture early on, it was such a difficult thing mentally to wrap your head around everything that a client brings to the table, all the desires, wants, problems, and sight. What's your approach in pulling that design out of what a client is looking for?
Well, you know, everyone is different. And I think I like to try to take my time and get to know people first and, you know, do a lot of listening. And, you know, it's about getting to the heart of, you know, how these people live. And, you know, what brings them joy and, you know, what things they're interested in. And it's much, much less about me and much more about them. We go through a process that, you know, the more I get to know that person, the less mistakes I make, you know, through the design process. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, inventing that something that's never been invented before. You have to fail several, if not hundreds of times.
right?
You know, before you come up with a well-considered solution that's right for them. Mm. It doesn't, you know, we've done many homes that aren't right for everyone. They're right for the people that they're designed for.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I think I've told this story before, but when I was at Andrews, one of my dad's colleagues, I was in the bookstore. He came up to me with this, you know, binder that he had, it must have been on like, you know, this very antiquated version of Google SketchUp or something at that point. And he's like, look what I did. He was a theology, you know, guy. And he's like, look what I did. And he showed me this kind of McMansion, you know, drawing of a house that they were building. And I was like, oh, he's like, why does anyone need someone like you? And he kind of laughed and, ouch, you know, yeah. And I was just, I just kind of like held my tongue and, you know, 5 minutes later, it was like, I should have said, I can read the Bible. Why does anyone need anyone like you? You know, I don't think people often understand the level of tailored nature that goes into a home that is so specific to the individual's needs. People even not knowing what they need, but the individual's needs and the location. How do you find a location then pushes back on a client's needs? Do you ever find you have people that want something but the location's just wrong for them, or
yeah, you I run think, into stuff I think like they that? They often come in to you know, our first meeting with some preconceived notions about what they want, and those are great, but I think what we try to do is make sure that, you know, they've made typically they've made a massive investment in a piece of property.
Mm. So you find people generally come to you after they have a piece of land, and
there are, you know, there are sometimes situations where they'll come to us without land, mm-hmm. but we really don't start talking seriously until, you know, the land is sort of in place, because that has such an impact on the design, right, as well for us. And I think, so, you know, going into it, typically these people, and sometimes like, we were just talking about the place that you photographed this past summer for us. That piece of property has been in his family since he was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, there's a, you know, adoration for that piece of property that not everyone else has. So he loved it to begin with, and wanted to take care of it and wanted to do what was right for it.
Right.
And, you know, it, it results in us being able to talk him through, okay, you know, we know you love this, so now let's figure out together what's right for it.
Right. So the project that Russ is talking about is on your website currently.
Yeah.
How do you reference it on your website?
We call it Englishman Bay Retreat.
Englishman Bay. Now this project has a courtyard that is not really, it's a three-sided courtyard, mm-hmm. around kind of a rise in the land there. Did that really influence that whole design, basically that piece of geography in the middle there?
Yeah, I mean, the house sits entirely on, you know, ledge. That's within, yeah, you know, 6 to 12 inches of
topsoil. Yeah, the entire house is floating, basically.
Right, and so we didn't want to, on this particular site, you know, come in with dynamite and blast a, you know, massive hole for our foundation through solid rock. So what we did instead, and it did multiple things for us. What we did instead was, you know, lifted the building up on steel columns in this case. And it's about, you know, one story in the air, essentially.
Yeah.
And so it lifted us off the ground plane and, you know, kept the disturbance to, you know, a piece of property that this client loved to, you know, a fairly minimal degree. And it also allowed us to, you know, the other thing that I noticed when I first visited the property was that your view and appreciation of the ocean down at the ground level was somewhat compromised by some of the topography there.
Right.
And just by raising it, you know, one story, it was improved dramatically.
Yeah, sitting on that, I guess you'd call it a back porch, essentially, but sitting on that back porch closer to the ocean there and seeing through the trees, you're just barely up past that little bluff there. And it's really neat when you approach the house, how you can kind of come around that first element and see both under, through it. It really pulls you through. just to, you know, it pulls you through to the whole experience of why you're there to begin with, which but, is really
that,
cool.
That U shape that you mentioned, that was really sort of the result of, you know, the idea of walking this property. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, this family had used this property from an adjacent property as access to a pebble beach. And so they, you know, basically had worn a path through the woods. Mm-hmm. And the idea was we wanted to sort of continue that path or, you know, be a tributary off of that path into the house. Mm. And the house itself becomes a bit of a path. And so that yeah. U shape is the path, you know, through the house. And, you know, as you walk that path, you can see other parts and pieces of the home, including people traveling the path.
Right. And you also, like, with the master bedroom framed a view to, like, two points of land. It was, you just feel like you should see the Goonies pirate ships coming out when you look out the master bedroom window. And for any of you that are listening to this or watching, and if you're completely lost, I think I'll ask our studio manager to put in some photos of what we're talking about so they can get an idea too, since we've gone on a little bit of a tangent there. So but anyways, back to our previously outlined discussion. What are some of the basic principles you use to engage, start, conduct your creative design process? What are the real basic things that you come to that you kind of act as, maybe not boundaries, but things that tell you this is going good or not going good because of X, Y, Z, that are kind of to a degree truths outside of what you're doing that influence what you are doing?
You know, I think for me, we started to talk about this already, but using the site, so not only the site, but the person as well, that's, you know, interacting with the site, using the site though as a guiding principle all the way through the process. And so when you are trying to figure out a solution to a programmatic problem, you know, for instance, like where does the kitchen need to go on this piece of property, and, you know, how does it relate to the property? Well, when you're not sure, you can pan out and take a look at, okay, where is the sun in relationship to the kitchen? Mm-hmm. And that means, you know, for us, typically that means that the kitchen wants to go on the east side of the house, where, you know, in the morning you can go and enjoy a cup of coffee with the sunrise.
Right.
And so that helps us. It's a very sort of pragmatic way of seeing things, but it helps us sort of, you know, have some guiding principles from the beginning about where these sort of spatial pieces go. And so, you know, we try to basically act as if we're, you know, living in the house throughout a day. And so when you rise in the morning, you're in the kitchen, and then during the day, you're maybe interacting with the living room. And so it's associated or oriented towards the south. And then at the end of the day, maybe that's where the bedrooms are on the west side, or maybe the screen porch, so that you can enjoy the sunset.
I love broken west light in the evening in the living room. Our old house had a lot of that. But if you don't have something breaking that up, some trees or something, it gets really, really overwhelming. But now, your article that you're writing on is around sketching, and you're a bit of a legend even in the school that we both went to for your sketching abilities.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember they you know, like, just let Russ go, he's not here anymore, and they'd still have your drawings up, like, in the architecture building. It was you and who's the other guy who actually teaches there? Von Maurer. Mm-hmm. Russ Tyson and Von Maurer, things were always
Andrew
on
Von
the wall.
Maurer.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I got to get that good. That's what I got to do. Okay. But what is it about sketching specifically that you think translates into a better design rather than going computer-aided design all the way?
Well, you know, the computer is an incredible tool. And, you know, on all projects, we end up using it to ultimately deliver, you know, a set of drawings to a builder that he can build
sure.
from. But I think, you know, the position where you shift from, you know, designing something early on by hand to putting it on the computer, I think that's different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone has to do what works for them. But for me specifically, you know, I try to hang on to that sort of drawing piece as long as possible.
Right.
In the process, partly because
And if anyone who's curious, if you follow the Witten Instagram feed, which is at Witten Architects, I think it is, you're always posting kind of those schematic sketches and renderings and stuff as you're working through them, which is really interesting. So you can go to their Instagram and see that. But sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. But I, you know, ever since I was a child, I've absolutely loved drawing, and it's sort of what sort of drew me to architecture to begin with. And, you know, as a kid, being able to sort of take what was in my head, you know, whether it be some, you know, race car with filled with rocket fuel,
right.
or a, you know, tree fort that was connected with bridges and swings and zip lines and right. everything, you know, being able to sort of take all that stuff up there in my head and put it down on a piece of paper, I just found a lot of fun
right.
In that. And so, you know, now I get to do that as a profession, which
just having
you can't fun. Ask, you can't ask for more than that.
You do it without people paying you, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I just find it a lot of fun to do and invigorating to me.
Right. Now, what is the deeper significance there? Do you think there's something that translates into do you think it's mostly just personal, that's best how you work, or if everyone was reduced to having to work through a series of grid points on a computer or whatever, or if they had this more organic ability to sketch, layer trace, and do that, do you think there's a deeper connection to a truly better result for, you know, very organic beings that need a space to live in if it's done with freehand, you know, in its schematic phase? Does it end up being a better thing for organic beings, you know?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, just like a handmade product
right.
is, you know, deemed more valuable.
And there's something in, like, if you get, like, this mug, you know, they'll stamp out a million of these and they'll be right on perfect, exactly the same. But the mug I had my coffee out of this morning is like a really nice mug that Tim had bought me for a Christmas gift a while ago. And it's not perfectly round, you know, and everything else, but it's really nice. And I get a lot of, you know, there's something about it, you know.
Yeah, it's much more tactile, and it feels like, you know, another human, you know, put this together rather
right.
than sort of very precise machine. And I think there's something valuable in that. I think the other thing that I found, you know, in the design process itself is that by hand drawing ideas and then presenting those to a client, and, you know, initially my hand drawings may be very schematic and rough and hard to read for anyone other than myself.
Right.
Getting to the spot where I can present to a client, it's really about just eliminating a bunch of lines to get down to the essence of what I want to show them sure. and what's really important. It's just subtracting stuff.
Right.
And then so when I present that to them, what I think is really neat is it's still hand-drawn. It still feels natural and made by a person, but it also doesn't look finished.
Right.
It's not complete. So what that allows for is, you know, the person viewing it can then use their own imagination to fill in the blanks.
Right.
And then feel like a participant, more of a participant in the design process.
Steven Spielberg did this with Jaws.
I didn't know that.
So they couldn't afford, and I'm not saying you can't afford a computer, but they couldn't afford to do a believable shark. And so as you're saying that you're allowing... hand sketching allows an individual to, you know, realize that this is not finished, and they fill it in with their mind to a degree with your leading through very skilled sketching. Jaws was kind of like that, where they put in the elements of a shark and the viewer.
Just little bits and pieces.
Little of it bits, you know, just little tiny thing, and it engaged the viewer far more.
They imagined something worse than it probably was.
Yeah, and so it has this effect of drawing the person in and participating in it more. Just, you know, it's kind of like reading a book. You have to produce the whole movie in your head, kind of. rather than just watching it and having it all right there.
That's why the book is always better than the movie that's created because of the book.
Yeah, yeah. And that is a very interesting point, too, that I found with the little bit of architecture that I practiced. If you made a computer model and showed it to people, everything could be monochromatic, and they'd still say, is it going to be gray? Yeah. I was like, no. It's just,
well, and they start looking at, well, tell me about this light fixture. And
we just grabbed that and put it in.
When you do photorealistic renderings, people start to pick out things that aren't, at least at that stage, necessarily important, to the big picture.
Right.
And I think allowing people's minds to fill in the blanks and use their imagination, I think they see a better product because of it. And then again, like we said already, they feel like more of a participant in the design.
Because I've been kind of behind the scenes with some of your projects, I know the interesting way that your firm has approached coming to a design for a given piece of land, like the large project in Southern Maine that we did the video on. Mm-hmm. I don't know the legalities of names and everything else, so I'll just leave the descriptor at that. But how you guys came to choosing a final, the leading design to move forward. Like, walk me through that process, unless that's a trademark special secret sauce behind the scenes.
No. And for that particular project, that was a home, and it's called Spurwink Retreat on our website. Good. If you want to take a look at the images. But that particular home, sits on 1,800 feet of water frontage, and
amazing location.
Yeah, just an amazing location that is incredibly 10 minutes from Portland. You feel like you're in another world, and it's a very natural setting with an incredible view of coastline and islands and distant ocean views. And I felt incredibly blessed to be able to sort of work on a property like that.
Another just absolutely astounding project. So go to their website and check it out.
But, in that scenario, our office approached the client with the idea that, we want to make sure we really sort of study this. And so we actually, I think it was either 4 or 5, architects sort of developed a design, a schematic design, of the project. And so we presented those 4 or 5 options, to our client. And, they were all sort of hand-drawn.
Mm-hmm.
The clients then got the opportunity to sort of see, 4 or 5 different ways of looking at, how this home might sit in that setting.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because you took 4 or 5, very creative, talented people and put a lot of horsepower in it, going down very different roads for ideas for the same location. And then the client got to sit there and really, take in, all right, here's one concept, here's another concept, here's another, and they each had a very different flavor. And lo and behold, Russ's concept got chosen. Telling you, this guy's good.
It definitely was a collaborative process, and all schemes were sort of, everyone had input on them for sure.
Right. But yeah, again, that project was really fun to shoot and everything too. So here's a interesting question. For you and I both came from the exact same belief background, we'll call it, and without turning it into a religious discussion or anything else, how do you feel that belief and worldview influences how a person creates? Is there any connection there that a person that holds belief would approach a creative process differently than a person that does not? Do you spend much time thinking about that at all, about how it influences it?
I like to think that, and I know there are lots of different worldviews out there.
Just a few.
I like to think that my specific, Christian worldview is entangled with the idea that we need to love people. And with that comes empathy, for whatever is of interest to them. And it's also about having an extremely, and I still work on this, and this is sort of aspirational, and I think it should be for everyone, but working towards having an unselfish attitude.
That's a hard one for me.
Yeah, it's extremely hard. But I think, you know, we as humans are naturally selfish, and the world around us sort of like
reinforces that
idea of, you know, get ahead of the next person. But I think, you know, a Christian worldview doesn't always actually materialize, I don't think, in some people, but a Christian worldview should be about unselfishness. When it comes right down to it, that's mm-hmm. what it's about. Having an unselfish attitude to the people around you and, you know, looking out for their interests more than yours.
Right. So that I would see that easily translating into a person being conscious of their own ability or, you know, lack of ability to hear a person. Like, I might have too much of my ideas going in front of me of my aesthetic, my ideas for this site, a process of belief that places empathy, love, and respect high might push you to be listening more deeply and putting that other person's concerns and desires ahead of your own ego for design, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it just encourages you to stop and listen to people, and I have to say it to myself, you know, probably almost every day, and is stop and listen, you know, and don't rush ahead with what you're thinking about,
right?
Because the world doesn't revolve around you.
That's a hard one to just, you know, to just stop and be present. That's a little bit more of an Eastern spirituality kind of idea, but it's the same concept of just, you know, just stop there and experience the moment, pull it in and see what's actually happening there and, you know, process it and create something out of it.
And the hope is that by having that kind of attitude, and again, it's aspirational. I don't, you know, if I ever get to the spot where I feel like I've completely arrived at that, maybe I haven't.
Yeah. There's a really good quote. And it's attributed to a few people, but, follow those that are seeking truth and flee from those who have found it. And in my own journey, I've found that I've just naturally gravitated to that sentiment. Whenever I get into a situation where anything is too certain, it becomes either boring or uncomfortable for me. And there's certain things that you need to have certain, you know, just for it's healthy for kids to be able to think like dad, you know, is going to stick around and mommy is going to stick around and always be there for us as much as possible. But when it, like, even having like a steady paycheck, like every week I'm certain I'll get this amount, that becomes soul-sucking for me, which sounds really odd.
You know what, though? It's like what I think is neat is, you know, back to the sort of unselfishness piece, I think there is certainty when you witness an act of unselfishness by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
There is certainty and truth in that. I mean, that touches everyone when they see that happen.
That is true. When you watch acts of empathy, everyone gets a little kind of, Well, cool. Thank you so much for coming down and visiting. Now you're going to have to come over to my house and have dinner and critique
and be honest.
House. Yeah, no, this is great, Trent. Great house you have here.
I'm looking forward to it, actually. It'll be fun.
Well, again, thanks for coming down. It was great talking with you. Look for Russ's article in the upcoming AIA Design Theory article in Main Home Design. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time, or listen to you, or talk to you, and you'll listen to us next time, however that works.
Thank you. So.